Hi, this is Brenda, your podcast host for The Political Strategist. I'm back here on the podcast. I want to talk about the role of corporate entities in government gang stalking and harassment. And this time, for this podcast, I want to talk about AT&T. They are actively involved in government gang stalking and, I believe, acting in concert with the U.S. military forces to bring about my harm, and I know the harm of other persons like me, community persons like me, maybe political candidates. I'm looking at their participation in these activities in my own home and around my own home. One of the reasons why I left my home in 2022 was to get away from the chemical attacks and the dangerous chemical presence of the two large AT&T towers that's situated right next to my house. Not one, but two. I didn't know what was going on. Of course, I suspected maybe something might be wrong because two towers, not one. And I consider it to be an invasion of privacy and an invasion of my property, the enjoyment of my property. A friend recently told me this year, or maybe the end of last year, that the cell phone towers emit a lot of radiation, and two together emit dangerous amounts of radiation that could actually be lethal. I just found that out. And AT&T found it convenient to situate two towers right here next to my residence here in South Carolina and ignore the dangerous documented effects of the amount of radiation emitting from these towers and the danger to me and my family members who reside at this residence. For the record, we were here first. I believe the first tower came about 2012 when Barack Obama was in office as president. The second tower, I believe, was erected while President Trump was in office in either 2018 or 19. And certainly in both years, I was not here at the residence. I returned to my residence in both years to find the erection and the installing of these towers near my residence. So I didn't know. I didn't have an opportunity to respond to them. I didn't have an opportunity to protest their installation right next to my property. In both years, I have documented evidence that I was in Michigan and not here at my residence. But certainly the lingering dangerous effects of the presence of these towers at my residence is evident right now in the change of my voice. And I'm almost certain there are other physical maladies or changes that have taken place in my body due to the radiation that has been emitted from these towers. AT&T. And then to further, add insult to injury by doing something recently. Recently, when I returned from Michigan, I found out that AT&T, by the way, was the owner of these towers situated outside of my house on 278. I found out these towers are owned and operated by AT&T. But I further insulted to the injury when AT&T, I came in to get DirecTV, whom I've learned is an entity that's loosely or maybe, strongly connected to DirecTV. And they came in and installed cable service pursuant to my request recently. I think I've now had cable service maybe a month or two. But what I found really, 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 really odd, and then yesterday I found out that it too was abridged my rights and violated my rights as a consumer when they came in and installed in my bedroom a AT&T cable box, and along with this box, a very large cable is coming from the box and going out through my bedroom window. So they actually drilled a hole in my bedroom window, and my window is partially exposed because of this cable wire. And then the cable wires that were already in my second den are just sitting there and creating a tripping hazard. The bedroom cable is right in front of my bathroom door, which creates an immediate tripping hazard where I have tripped twice already in front of my bathroom door, a tripping hazard. And I asked the technician, I said, there's no other way that you can install this cable device? He told me, no, this is the only way. I said, well, I might trip over it. In fact, I advised him that I have to have knee surgery. And until then, I have a little bit of trouble navigating over these cables. And sometimes when I get up to, of course, come into the bathroom, I may inadvertently, it presents a tripping hazard. If you're in the dark, you can't see, maybe you're just sleepy and not pay attention. And that is exactly what has taken place twice already. And where I've tripped and hit my head on the bathroom door, and tripped and hit my knees. And so AT&T has just voluntarily agreed to bring more hazards into my home in addition to the two cable or telephone towers that I have sitting outside my house, which are emitting dangerous levels of radiation. How bold. How obvious. How treacherous. And so yesterday, again, this was augmented to me, the danger of it, when a technician, I asked that two additional boxes be installed in my home, in two other bedrooms that are here in the house. And I indicated to the gentleman, I said, well, he said, I want boxes installed. He said, well, we have to drill holes and install cables going from the main box to the bedroom boxes that will be obvious and evident on your floor. I said, well, no, I already have that. And he said, well, we can do wireless boxes. I said, well, why wasn't I advised of that during your first installation? He said, they probably told you. I said, no, they didn't. There's no way someone in my condition would agree to a cable box that has a big cable situated and installed on my floor where I could trip on it, or anybody for that matter. You don't have to be anybody that has a knee problem. Anybody, an elderly person, anybody could trip on these cables. There's no way I would agree to such a thing if there was another option available. He said, ma'am, if you get those wireless boxes in your installed instead of the ones with the cable, he said it's going to be $106 for each box. I said, well, I don't mind the expense. I just need them to be done. He said, well, oh, okay, I'll have to schedule it another day. And then he added some other condition that would slow me down a little bit about the cost of getting these wireless boxes where I don't have cables on my floors that I could trip on, where those boxes would be installed. I thought it was just so egregious that AT&T would commit to and actually follow through with such an effort. it is secondary to the first attack that is ongoing, and that is the presence of the AT&T cell towers outside of my house. It just goes on and on. Who are these people? This is corporate invasion. This is corporate harassment. This is corporate gang government, gang stalking. And it is something I will address in lawsuits and through public complaints or complaints through public boards like the FCC. It's ridiculous. Why would you place a customer in danger in order to promote and advocate your services in this area? A customer is actually personally in danger. Personally, these cell phone towers, I don't know why you don't have why they're situated here next to my home. I will advise anybody listening to this podcast that if you drive by any other cell phone towers, you'll find that they are in isolated fields where there's no residences nearby. You can see that if you just go up and down the hallway, Highway 278. I've seen it in Michigan as well. These cell phone towers are isolated. And there was a big, big uproar by parents in Michigan recently. I forgot what school district it was. When a cell phone tower was installed on top of a school. And there was a big public uproar about the danger of the same. And that cell tower was removed. It was removed because residents complained and parents complained about the danger to the students. And I am complaining in a manner likewise. And I continue to complain. And I am doing this podcast on the political strategist to further document my outrage about not only my outside circumstances, but the inward gall of AT&T to present dangers inside of my house. What gall? What gall? These people never stop. And so the invasion and the dangers presented by AT&T continue. They continue. And I'm documenting it here on the political strategist. We'll see what happens because I'm going to pursue, again, my claims against AT&T of course, to the FCC and to anybody else that will listen. Frankly, I may make it part of my political platform. Because it's outrageous. It's outrageous. And I invite you to look up the incident in Michigan where they wanted to install a cell tower on top of a school and where public outrage was noted. And then I believe the efforts were abandoned by AT&T or whatever the company was. And so I'm getting a similar result here in my home here in South Carolina. Well, again, thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in to The Political Strategist, and I'll talk to you next time. Well, good evening. Welcome to The Political Strategist. This is your program host, Brenda Karen Sanders. I am on the podcast because tonight I want to talk about my dilemma for the 2024 U.S. congressional race. And you know, I have options. Sometimes having options can cause problems. It can cause indecision. It can cause delay. And I have so many options I am still considering for both Michigan and South Carolina. Many of you have been on this podcast and pretty much listened to a lot of my ideas that I have to propose for new laws or modify laws in the federal system. And I've talked about employment laws, discrimination laws, housing laws, and their whole host of laws that I would like to see enacted for after I'm, you know, elected to the U.S. Congress. And I say after I am because I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful and faithful about it. But this is my dilemma in the 13th Congressional District where I've run so many times in the state of Michigan. I can do that. And it would involve returning to Michigan. Thank goodness that U.S. congressional seats do not, and at least for Congress, do not have a residence requirement. Thank goodness they do have an age requirement and, of course, then the other individual state requirements. And you have to be a U.S. citizen. And I qualify for both of those. In South Carolina, though, the ballot requirements for access to the ballot are different. There's an option fee of $3,400 that can be paid. I like that because you don't have the labor of collecting signatures. But if one chose to collect signatures in South Carolina, I believe the requirement is a minimum of 10,000 signatures to get on the ballot in for Congress in South Carolina. I believe Robert F. Kennedy, the presidential candidate, has just or is securing signatures in South Carolina for his presidential bid. And I believe I saw that. I believe he has to get 20,000 signatures, and that's pretty good for a presidential candidate. My dilemma is raising money if I run in South Carolina for the $3,400 filing fee. I have an existing federal FEC committee, campaign committee. It's Brenda K. Sanders for Congress, a committee to elect Brenda K. Sanders for Congress. It's still active. I haven't modified or amended my statement of organization yet because I'm trying to determine where I will qualify for my entrance onto the ballot. Will it be Michigan or will it be South Carolina? Of course, the South Carolina issue can be easily resolved with a payment of $3,400 to the state of South Carolina and the election office by, I believe it's April 1st here in South Carolina. In Michigan, there's a little bit more time with the collection of voters' signatures to qualify for ballot access. And I believe that deadline is April 23rd. Now, the reason why I'm making this podcast is this. If I get a donation of $3,400 by way of a payment of a filing fee here in South Carolina for the congressional race for a Democrat, I will then remain here and run in South Carolina as a Democrat for Congress. The issues are the same on the federal level. The issues are the same as they would be in Michigan. I mean, there may be different local issues that would mandate, you know, the creation or advocacy of federal laws to meet certain local needs. But I believe I've laid the groundwork in both states to run for Congress. Why? Because I've run for Congress in both states before, and a lot of groundwork has been already established for my candidacy. The issues in South Carolina may be a little different than those in Michigan, but all will benefit if a federal law is enacted to address certain issues. I've talked about, and this is kind of like a cosmetic issue, but, you know, making Election Day a federal holiday. And I think that is so needed. And I want to, and I've said this before, I want to eliminate or severely or restrict absentee voting. I believe that it is a mechanism that actually curtails our voter involvement. And it's a lot, and I've seen it in Michigan, but the polls are empty because the voters are voting at home. they don't have an opportunity to engage other voters. They don't have an opportunity to engage the candidates. Many candidate forums, they don't attend those. And I think that needs to be curtailed. I think we need to get back to the old-fashioned way of going to the polls and inviting voter participation before the day of the votes. A lot of voters get to the polls, because I've worked the polls almost every election. I don't know, since what? The early, maybe late 80s. But voters get to polls. Who's this? I don't know this. And they don't know. I mean, unless a candidate has a lot of money to advertise on TV or radio, they're pretty clueless about who they're voting for. And I last worked a congressional election for myself in 2022. I worked at the polls in Michigan, and many voters did not know what to do about their congressional vote. And so I'm doing this podcast for this reason, to raise money for my South Carolina campaign, if that is in fact the direction I'm led to do. That would be a $3,400 filing fee to the South Carolina Election Office in the name of the committee to elect Brenda K. Sanders for Congress. I'm also starting a campaign committee account, and I will do that shortly. But I am seeking donations, seeking to raise funds to meet that filing deadline. And particularly, that has been the reason why I've not run in the state of South Carolina in previous races, because the fundraising, which I've not done a good job of initiating that, but hopefully I can pursue it this time and get enough money to make the ballot in South Carolina. And after that, I mean, I have all sorts of ideas for campaigning. To me, it is like it is a gift to me of looking at people in campaigning. I like to do it. I think it's not difficult at all. I think it's not a game, but it is certainly something that I enjoy as a candidate. Period. For Congress, wherever I've run, I've enjoyed it. But certainly for Congress, there are a lot of issues that need to be addressed. And hopefully, my campaign can get the either or necessary signatures to make the ballot in Michigan, or the money, the filing fee for the state of South Carolina congressional race. That's why I'm here on The Political Strategist, to explain my efforts, explain my vision, and explain what I plan to do in my bid for a congressional seat. So thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in to The Political Strategist once again. This is your host, Brenda K. Sanders, and I'll talk to you next time.